to the Hadavar Messianic Ministries audio presentation of the devotional study series entitled The First Regathering, Modern Israel. In this portion of our study, Hadavar Messianic Ministries Director, Pastor Bob Morris, will focus on key scriptures that illuminate the biblical significance of the modern state of Israel. In addition, he will begin an historical overview of the period from 66 AD to 1839. Following the teaching session, you'll be given information explaining how to contact Hadavar Messianic Ministries with your questions and to order additional resources. Now, let's begin lesson number 3. Here's Pastor Bob Morris.
As we begin session 3 of our study in the First Regathering, the history of modern Israel, we're looking at the biblical data that centers around the First Regathering of modern Israel. We're in my fourth point, the prophetic significance of the First Regathering. I'm covering a number of points under prophetic significance. First of all, I covered the Russian invasion of Israel. Then I talked about the First Regathering and the blessings of the Mosaic Covenant. That's where we find ourselves now in the third part of the prophetic significance of the nation of Israel today. We're looking at the blessings of the Mosaic Covenant. We started in Deuteronomy chapter 28. As I read Deuteronomy 28 verse 1, I wanted to especially note that the Mosaic Covenant is conditional and that the blessings of the Mosaic Covenant will come if the Jewish people obey and follow the Mosaic Covenant. However, the modern state of Israel is basically a secular state, with 90% of the Israelis being atheists or agnostic. So the basis for the promise of blessings isn't there. We then moved on to Deuteronomy 28 verses 2 through 6, which dealt with blessings for obedience. And these blessings talked about prosperity, and Israel is prospering today. However, the prosperity cannot be the prosperity talked about in verses 2 through 6, because Israel is a secular nation. Most of the Israelis, 90% of them, don't even believe in God, or aren't even sure that God exists, and the 99% of the Israeli population, like 99% of the Jewish population worldwide, has rejected the Messiahship of Jesus. So we are in disobedience to God, and there's no way that the Mosaic Covenant, we can be blessed on the basis of the Mosaic Covenant. We then started into Deuteronomy 28, verses 7 through 10. So let's, that dealt with the relationship of Israel to her enemies and with the deliverance that Israel will experience. And Israel has experienced miraculous deliverance from her enemies during the past 54 years of her existence. But today, the nation is not feared by her enemies. Israel has a very, very powerful military presence, but that has only caused her enemies to treat her with respect. They stand ready to pounce on any perceived Israeli weakness that they can possibly exploit. So the military situation we have today is hardly that which is envisioned under the blessings of the covenant. That brought session 2 to an end, so let's begin session 3 proper here with Deuteronomy 28, verses 11 through 14. The Lord will make you abound in prosperity, in the offspring of your body, and in the offspring of your beast, and in the produce of your ground, and in the land which the Lord swore to your fathers to give you. The Lord will open for you his good storehouse, the heavens, to give you rain to your land in its season, and to bless all the work of your hand. And you shall lend to many nations, and you shall not borrow. The Lord will make you the head and not the tail, and you only shall be above, and you shall not be underneath, if you will listen to the commandments of the Lord your God, which I charge you today, to observe them carefully, and do not turn aside from any of the words which I commanded you today, to the right or to the left, to go after other gods, to serve them. Again, this section of the blessings of the covenant deals with prosperity. But the prosperity that the modern state experiences today is not what's envisioned under the blessings of the covenant. Verse 12 is telling. Verse 12 is an important verse. Verse 12 says that Israel will be so prosperous when she's receiving the blessings of the covenant, that she will not borrow from any other nation. The last part of verse 12, you shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. And the truth of the matter is, Israel has relied heavily on millions of dollars in grants and loan guarantees from, for example, the United States in order to survive. So she's not experiencing the prosperity promised in verses 11 through 14. That's the promise section of Deuteronomy 28. Now let's back up to Leviticus 26. We're in Deuteronomy, just continue left, Numbers, Leviticus 26. Come to Leviticus and stop, put on the brakes at chapter 26. We will start in verse number 1 of Leviticus 26. And look at verses 1 through 3. Leviticus 26, verses 1 through 3. You shall not make for yourselves idols, nor shall you set up for yourselves an image or a sacred pillar, nor shall you place a figured stone on your land or bow down to it, for I am the Lord your God. You shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary. I am the Lord. If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments so as to carry them out. And then in verse 4 we begin with the blessings of the covenant. The point I want to emphasize in Leviticus 26 verse 1 is that idol worship is back in the land. That's very unfortunate. It's amazing. But if you look at the magazine Biblical Archaeology Review, May, June 2001, page 17, there's an article. That article contains a picture. The picture is that of four Israeli ladies dancing before a clay figure in the foreground, a little tiny clay figures in the foreground, and these ladies are dancing before it. And here's what the article in Biblical Archaeology Review states. It states, Potter Daphne Zuckerman replicated a clay figure, thought to be that of a goddess. For about half an hour they danced, while the leader recited a prayer, thanking the goddess for the forces of life, fertility, and peace. So, that law of the Mosaic Covenant has been violated in Israel today, at least on this one occasion, a very gross and very obvious occasion. Let's look at Leviticus 26:4. Remember verse 3. Let's back up to verse 3. But if you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments so as to carry them out, then I shall give you rains in their season, so that the land will yield its produce, and the trees of the field will bear their fruit. Another indication that we're not experiencing the blessings of the covenant lies in the fact that Israel has been suffering a time of drought recently, a time of very severe drought rather than abundant rains. For example, in 2001, the Sea of Galilee, because of the drought, sank to an extremely low level, endangering Israel's water supply. And we've been praying for the rains to come and fill up the Sea of Galilee and end this drought that Israel has been going through here early in the 21st century. So Israel is experiencing drought. She's not experiencing the blessings of the covenant. Let's move on to verses 5 through 8 of Leviticus 26. Indeed, your threshing will last for you until grape gathering, and grape gathering will last until sowing time, and you will thus eat your food to the full and live securely in the land. Verse 6. I shall also grant peace in the land, so that you may lie down and with no one making you tremble. I shall also eliminate harmful beasts from the land, and no sword will pass through your land. But you will chase your enemies, and they will fall before you by the sword. Five of you will chase 100, and 100 of you will chase 10,000, and your enemies will fall before you by the sword. Well, the truth of the matter is that this state of security talked about in Leviticus 26 is hardly present today in Israel. In fact, Israel is harassed within and without by her enemies, especially in 2002 here. We've had the Al-Aqsa Intifada under full swing with many homicide bombers killing Israelis within the borders of the land, in the major cities, in Jerusalem, in Netanya, etc. Israel is harassed within and without by her enemies today. She is not experiencing the state of security that Leviticus 26 promises. And in fact, on April 24th, 2002, the mayor of Jerusalem stated this about the terrorism that stalks the land of Israel. He said in a speech, "In Israel, the war is being fought not 5,000 miles, but 500 feet from the bedrooms of our children, and we do not feel we have to apologize for defending ourselves." So the state of security promised in the blessings of the covenant is not present in Israel today. Let's continue on in Leviticus 26, verses 9 through 13. Verse 9, "So I will turn toward you and make you fruitful and multiply you, and I will confirm my covenant with you. You will eat the old supply and clear out the old because of the new. Moreover, I will make my dwelling among you, and my soul will not reject you. I will also walk among you and be your God, and you shall be my people. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, so that you would not be their slaves. And I broke the bars of your yoke and made you walk erect." Well, God is not walking in the midst of Israel today, though he will be, literally, during the Messianic Kingdom. In other words, let me sum this all up by saying Israel is not experiencing the blessings of the covenant today. Rather, she is experiencing the curses of the covenant today. And what are the curses of the covenant? Let me quickly outline the curses of the covenant. This is found in Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26, the latter part of the chapters. We're currently in Leviticus 26, so let's just continue on in Leviticus 26 to the cursing part of the chapter. We'll start with verse 14 and read through 17. "But if you do not obey me and do not carry out all these commandments, if instead you reject my statutes, and if your soul abhors my ordinances, so as not to carry out all my commands, and so break my covenant, I in turn will do this to you." Very clear. "I will appoint over you a sudden terror, consumption, and fever that shall waste away the eyes and cause the soul to pine away. And you shall sow your seed uselessly, for your enemies will eat it up. And I will set my face against you, so that you shall be struck down before your enemies, and those who hate you shall rule over you, and you shall flee when no one is pursuing you." The first curse is sickness, harassment, and insecurity in the land. Let's read verses 18 through 20. "If also, after these things, you do not obey me, then I will punish you seven times more for your sins. I will also break down your pride of power. I will also make your sky like iron and your earth like bronze. Your strength shall be spent uselessly, for your land shall not yield its produce, and the trees of the land shall not yield their fruit." So these additional curses for disobedience include drought and famine. Verses 21 and 22. "If then you act with hostility against me and are unwilling to obey me, I will increase the plague on you seven times according to your sins." Verse 22. "I will let loose among you the beasts of the field, which shall bereave you of your children and destroy your cattle and reduce your number, so that your roads lie deserted." The next curse promised is danger from wild animals. These judgments came upon Israel, before and during the Babylonian captivities. These were curses that Israel experienced before and during the Assyrian and Babylonian captivities. Let's move on to Leviticus 26, verses 23 through 26. "And if by these things you are not, turned to me, but act with hostility against me, then I will act with hostility against you. And I, even I, will strike you seven times for your sins. I will also bring upon you a sword which will execute vengeance for the covenant. And when you gather together into your cities, I will send pestilence among you, so that you shall be delivered into your enemies' hands." Verse 26. When I break your staff of bread, 10 women will bake your bread in one oven, and they will bring back your bread to in rationed amounts, so that you will eat and not be satisfied. Then, after these previous judgments, will come more. Will come the judgments of war and hunger caused by siege. And these elements were very clearly fulfilled in the Babylonian captivity. Let's move on to verses 27 through 33. Yet, if in spite of this you do not obey me, but act with hostility against me, then I will act with wrathful hostility against you. And I will punish you 7 times for your sins. Further, you shall eat the flesh of your sons and the flesh of your daughters you shall eat. I then will destroy your high places and cut down your incense altars and heap your remains on the remains of your idols, for my soul shall abhor you. I will lay waste your cities as well as make your sanctuaries desolate, and I will not smell your soothing aromas. I will make the land desolate so that your enemies who settle in it shall be appalled over it. You, however, I will scatter among the nations and will draw out a sword after you as your land becomes desolate and your cities become waste. So the awful promise of devastation, deportation, and dispersion follows. Did you notice verse 29 when I read verse 29? Further, you shall eat the flesh of your sons and the flesh of your daughters you shall eat. Verse 29 is the curse of cannibalism. God will make the curses upon Israel more and more and more and more severe until they come down to the curse of cannibalism. Jewish people will eat their own children. And the curse of cannibalism has come upon Israel on 2 occasions already. The first was during the Babylonian destruction. And then that curse also fell upon Israel during the Roman destruction of AD 70. So we've experienced this horrible curse as well, this horrible curse of the covenant, Leviticus 26. All right, let's move on to Leviticus 26, verses 34 and 35. Then the land will enjoy its Sabbaths all the days of the desolation, while you are in your enemy's land. Then the land will rest and enjoy its Sabbaths. All the days of its desolation it will observe the rest, which it did not observe on your Sabbaths while you were living in it. Now here Moses describes the state of the land after the fullness of judgment has come. The land will lay desolate. Again, this was experienced during the Babylonian exile, and again for the past 2,000 years after the Romans expelled us from the land. Let's read verses 36 through 39. As for those of you who may be left, I will also bring weakness into their hearts in the lands of their enemies, and the sound of a driven leaf will chase them, and even when no one is pursuing, they will flee as though from the sword, and they will fall. They will therefore stumble over each other as if running from the sword, although no one is pursuing, and you will have no strength to stand up before your enemies. But you will perish among the nations, and your enemy's land will consume you. So those of you who may be left will rot away because of their iniquity in the lands of your enemies, and also because of the iniquities of your forefathers, they will rot away with them. Now in verses 36 through 39, during this time of desolation, the state of the people is described. The Jewish people are described as fearful, weak, dispersed all over the world, and persecuted. And this is a very, very apt description of the past 2,000 years. An even more detailed description of these curses is found in Deuteronomy 28, verses 15 through 68. However, in Leviticus 26, starting in verse 40, a dramatic change is then promised. Verses 40 through 46 of Leviticus 26. If they confess their iniquity and the iniquity of their forefathers in their unfaithfulness, which they committed against me, and also in their acting with hostility against me, I also was acting with hostility against them to bring them into the land of their enemies, or if their uncircumcised heart becomes humbled so that they make amends for their iniquity, then I will remember my covenant with Jacob And I will remember also my covenant with Isaac, and my covenant with Abraham as well. And I will remember the land. For the land will be abandoned by them, and shall make up for its Sabbaths, while it is made desolate without them. They, meanwhile, shall be making amends for their iniquity, because they rejected my ordinances, and their soul abhorred my statutes. Yet in spite of this, when they are in the land of their enemies, I will not reject them, nor will I so abhor them as to destroy them, breaking my covenant with them, for I am the Lord their God. But I will remember for them the covenant with their ancestors, whom I brought out of the land of Egypt in the sight of the nations, that I might be their God. I am the Lord. These are the statutes and ordinances and laws which the Lord established between himself and the sons of Israel through Moses at Mount Sinai. Here, in verses 40 through 46, God promises restoration to the land after a worldwide dispersion. And this restoration is the topic of our class. The topic of our class is how God brought about this promised restoration to the land, the first regathering, the regathering in unbelief in preparation for judgment. And that judgment is the final judgment of the tribulation period, the time of Jacob's trouble. Okay, I just have one final introductory topic to discuss before we get into the subject proper. And this topic is the topic, the times of the Gentiles. The times of the Gentiles. This is my fifth introductory topic. Let me start by asking a question. Just what exactly is the times of the Gentiles? Well, the definition of this topic can best be derived from Luke chapter 21, verse 24. Let me read that to you. Luke 21, 24. And they will fall by the edge of the sword, and be led captive into all the nations, and Jerusalem will be trampled underfoot by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. Now, the times of the Gentiles is best defined this way. The times of the Gentiles is that long period of time from the Babylonian exile until the second coming of the Messiah. It's that long period of time from the Babylonian exile until the second coming of the Messiah. And during this time period, Gentiles are allowed to dominate the city of Jerusalem. Now, this does not rule out temporary Jewish control over the city. However, the times of the Gentiles will end when Gentiles no longer trod down the city of Jerusalem. That's when the times of the Gentiles will end. Other passages covering the subject are Daniel 2, verses 31 through 45. Daniel 2, 31 through 45. Daniel 7, verses 1 through 28. Daniel 7, verses 1 through 28. Revelation 13, verses 1 through 10. Revelation 13, verses 1 through 10, and Revelation 17, verses 7 through 14. We are in the times of the Gentiles right now. And the evidence of that fact is the dominance of the Temple Mount by the Muslims, and the fact that the ownership of East Jerusalem is disputed today. There is a spiritual reason why the Palestinians demand that Jerusalem be their capital city. As long as the Gentiles dominate Jerusalem and harass Jerusalem, the times of the Gentiles is in existence. Remember, the times of the Gentiles will not end until Gentiles are no longer allowed to harass and dominate the city of Jerusalem like we're experiencing today. All right, let me just sum this up with a few thoughts about Zionism itself. First of all, I want to state that Zionism is not subjective. It's not just some subjective emotion found in the heart of Jewish people. It is emotional, but Zionism is also backed by objective biblical evidence. Now, if you're a Zionist and you want to defend the existence of the modern state of Israel, I would suggest that you defend the Jewish right to the land from the scriptures that we've looked at. All other arguments contain a limited amount of clout, and I've heard all kinds of arguments. But all these other arguments are simply man's social, political, and economic reasons for supporting or not supporting the the modern state of Israel. Now, man's social, political, and economic reasoning changes as easily as the breeze. But the Word of God, in contrast, is a firm anchor that can never be moved. The grass withers, the flower fades, but the Word of our God stands forever. Man's reasons are like that grass. They're like the flower. They're here today and they're gone tomorrow. However, God and His revelation are rocks. They're mountains that we can utterly depend upon. And if we look at the Scriptures and base our understanding of what's going on in this world from the Scriptures, we will see that Zionism and the Jewish return to our homeland are important ingredients in God's plan and in God's program for this world. Well, that brings me to the end of my introductory material. I'd like to move into the next part of our class. And this section deals with the background of the period. I want to do a quick historical survey of the period from 66 AD until 1839. Quick historical survey of the period. And we can sum up this historical survey with this statement. There's always been a continuous Jewish presence in the land of Israel from 66 AD to 1839. And that's dramatized if you go to a little northern Israeli village of Pekin. It lies halfway between Safat and Nahariya in northern Israel. It's the little village of Pekin. If you go into that village, you can find a synagogue near the entrance of the town. That synagogue is a very ancient structure. It's claimed that the two carved stones in its walls once belonged to the Herodian temple in Jerusalem. Now, the Zainati family worships there. The Zainati family worships there, and they trace their origin back to the first century as well. Just as those stones go all the way back to the first century, the Zainati family traces their origin all the way back to the first century. And the family notes with pride that they are the only Jews in Israel whose ancestors lived uninterruptedly in Eretz Yisrael since the first century. And they are correct. They are authentic. These Jews are the embodiment of a physical Jewish connection with the land that never was cut. Now, the Romans may have laid the entire nation waste between AD 70 and AD 135. They slaughtered between 600,000 and 1,356,000 Jews. They carried off between 101,700 to 300,000 Jewish people into slavery. Yet, in the aftermath of that monumental dispersion, a few thousand Jews somehow managed to remain in the country. They were heavily taxed. They were denied their right to visit Jerusalem. The survivors made their homes in Galilee, farming the land and working their trades. But they remained. And that's the key. They remained. They remained, and they married, and they raised a family until this very day. Now, the point I want to make is that the modern state of Israel did not really begin in 1948. The modern state of Israel is a nation whose heritage spans the 2,000-year gap between the first century and 1948. The point I want to stress is the fact that the Jewish people may have been dispersed out of the land. The nation may have ceased to be a recognized political entity. Yet Jewish people have lived in the land for the entire time of the dispersion. So we'll be looking at the rise of the modern state of Israel in this class. And as we do, please keep in mind that we're not studying the birth of a nation. Instead, we're studying the resurrection of that nation. We'll start at a particular point in time as we look at the rise of the modern state. But we're only going to do that because of the limitations of this class. The history of the modern state does not begin with Zionism. The history of the modern state continues with Zionism. Therefore, before we get into our study of Zionism and the history of Israel, I'd like to do an extremely brief historical overview of the land of Israel. from the first century until the rise of Zionism. Let's start in AD 66, and we'll go to AD 640. AD 66 to AD 640 is the Roman period. In AD 66, the Jews in Israel rose in revolt against Rome. It was an effort to free their homeland from Roman rule. Jerusalem fell. The temple was destroyed in AD 70. It took approximately two more years of mopping up operations by the Romans to finish the job. With the capture of the Dead Sea stronghold at Masada in 73 AD, the war against Rome came to an end. Even so, a strong Jewish presence remained in the land, especially in Galilee. In AD 132, Emperor Hadrian published new restrictive laws against the Jewish religion. In addition, he decided to build a new city on the ruins of destroyed Jerusalem, and he wanted to erect a pagan temple on the site. He wanted to erect a pagan temple on the site of the burned-down Jewish temple. Now, in response, the Jews in Israel rebelled under the leadership of Bar Kokhba, a man named Bar Kokhba. It took 3 years before the Romans succeeded in putting down this bloody uprising. The historian Don Cassius states that 580,000 Jews fell by the sword, not counting those who perished from starvation, disease, and related causes. Many others were sold as slaves. Hadrian now carried out his plans in the belief that he would extinguish forever all Jewish hopes of restoration to a national homeland. A new city was built on the ruins of Jerusalem, and it was called Aelia Capitolina. Aelia Capitolina was the new name given to the site. A pagan temple was reared on the site of the old temple. An edict was issued prohibiting, on pain of death, any Jew from entering or even approaching the vicinity of the new city. The name of the province of Judea was changed to Syria Palestinia. The Romans changed the name of the province called Judea formally to Syria Palestinia. So the name Palestine was given to the land of Israel following the failure of the Bar Kokhba rebellion. Now, in the interval between the end of the Bar Kokhba revolt and the Muslim invasion, Israel enjoyed peace from outside invasion and a measure of prosperity. In 395, the extensive territories of the Roman Empire became divided into an eastern and a western part. And for the next 250 years, Israel was part of the eastern half of the empire. And you'll hear this era referred to as the Byzantine era, 395 AD to 634 AD, the Byzantine era. The modern name for this time period was derived from the name of the capital city in the eastern branch of the Roman Empire, Byzantium. Byzantium was the capital city, so we call this the Byzantine era. Now, the Jews in Palestine were concentrated during this period in Galilee. In Galilee, they formed the majority of the population. The number of Jews in Palestine in the 7th century is estimated to be about 200,000 people. About 200,000 people in Galilee, Jewish people in Galilee in the 7th century. Now we come to the Arab period. The Arab period would be the dates 634 to 1099. 634 to 1099, the Arab period. Now this long era of external peace and relative prosperity came to an end in 634 with the conquest of Palestine by the Arabs. The Muslim followers of Mohammed poured out of the deserts of the Arabian Peninsula. Within 100 years, they overran vast spaces extending from Central Asia through Northern Africa, the Spanish Peninsula. They went to the very borders of Southern France. There, the southern borders of Southern France, the Arab onrush was brought to a halt by the French forces under Charles Martel. Now, during the Arab period, the Jews lived in all parts of Palestine, and they derived their livelihood from agriculture and handicrafts. Tiberias on the Sea of Galilee, was a key Jewish center in the 7th and 8th centuries. There were also important Jewish settlements in Lydda, Ramla, Ashkelon, Caesarea, and Gaza. Some Jews even took up residence in Jerusalem. There was a revival of Jewish religious life in Palestine in this era, probably brought about by the stimulus of intellectual activity encouraged by the Umayyad and Abbasid caliphs. This period saw a revival of interest in the study of the Hebrew language, a fresh outpouring of Hebrew poetry. This period saw the activities of the Masoretes. The Masoretes' activities culminated in the production of the all-important Masoretic text of the Old Testament. That's the standard text for today. This all happened during the Arab period. Many of the synagogue hymns that are still in use today were the works of Palestinian poets of that time period. Now, after the decline of the two great Talmudic centers in Babylonia and the expiration of the Babylonian exile arc, Palestine, once again, was the spiritual center of Jewry. The head of the Jerusalem yeshiva assumed the title of Gaon of Jacob, and he was the recognized religious authority for all Jews living in the territory ruled by the Fatimid dynasty. The Jewish sect of the Karaites, who rejected the Talmudic regulation of Jewish life, established in Jerusalem, an ascetic brotherhood called the Mourners of Zion. They made Jerusalem the center of their movement. However, the number of Jews in Palestine during the Arab period was not large. The political unrest and the natural catastrophes which visited Palestine in that period impoverished the economic resources of the Palestinian Jews and reduced their numbers. So there were not a lot of Jews there, but they were there. Now let's move on to the years 1099 to 1291 and the Latin Kingdom of Jerusalem. Now we come to the period of the Crusades. The Crusades were motivated by three sets of circumstances. Number one, political, in other words, Europe's readiness for territorial expansion. Number two, economic. Europe was desirous of establishing commercial relations with the rich and prospering East. And number three, religious. There was a sense of solidarity felt by Christendom of the West towards the Byzantine state representing Christendom in the East. So we had political, economic, and religious background for the Crusades. And under that religious thought, there was a highly emotional desire to deliver the Holy Land of Christendom from the hand of the Muslims. And there were several Crusades, the first of which began in 1096. Jerusalem was captured in 1099. Now, the conquest of Palestine by the Crusaders was followed by the massacres of the Jewish people. The Crusader kingdom, then, continued until the death of Guy de Lusignan. He was the last king of the Latin Kingdom of Jerusalem. He was defeated by Saladin in 1187 in the Battle of the Horns of Hattin. And then Palestine became divided into Christian and into Muslim sections. Jerusalem surrendered to Saladin in October of 1187. Well, when Saladin died, there was a period of confusion following his death. He died in 1193, and that led to the next major period we come to, which is the period of the Mamluks. This is a 1291 to 1516. Now, the word Mamluk means slave. And the reason for this name lay in the fact that they were foreign slaves. Some of them were Turkish, others were of Circassian descent. Now, 47 of these Mamluk sultans reigned in the space of 276 years. Only one family retained power for more than four successive generations. Most of the others lasted only for a period of a few years. Some of them were insane, others were illiterate. Many came to the throne by assassinating their predecessors, and they were in turn murdered themselves. And yet, in spite of all this, the Mamluks repelled successive invasions of the Mongols, and they completed the liquidation of the Latin colonies in the Near East, the Crusader colonies. During this period of 1291 to 1516, there was a constant trickle of Jewish immigrants into Palestine during the Mamluk era. Okay, I can see that our time for this session is rapidly drawing to a close. We'll bring session number 3 to a close right now, and we'll pick up session 4 with the next period, the period of the Ottoman Empire that lasted from 1517 to 1917. So we'll return then for session 4, next session.
Thank you, Pastor Bob. It's our aim at Hadavar Messianic Ministries to deepen your understanding of God's Word and to better equip you to share the Messiahship of Jesus with your Jewish friends, relatives, co-workers, and neighbors. To order additional tapes or for more information, you can contact Hadavar Messianic Ministries at hadavar@hadavar.org. That's H-A-D-A-V-A-R @hadavar.org. Or write to Hadavar Messianic Ministries at 14804 Sand Canyon Avenue, Irvine, California, 92618. Or simply call us at 949-559-1701. Again, that number is 949-559-1701. Again, thanks for listening to this audio presentation of the First Regathering Modern Israel, brought to you by Hadavar Messianic Ministries. If you're listening to this class on audio tape, please turn the tape over to begin the next lesson. If you're listening to this class on CD, the next lesson will begin in a moment.